Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Thank you so much for listening. Episode number 501. We had episode 500 last week. Thank you guys for the support, kind words, feedback. We had Derek Jeter on the show along with Richard Deitch. So if you missed that, go into the archives, check that out. Also had Tom Brady and Jim Miller on the show a couple of weeks ago. Andrew Marchand, Charles Barkley, recent guests. So if you missed any of those episodes, check them out in the archives and subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. For episode number 501, we have Pablo Torre, who hosts a really interesting, and I know that's like a boring word to use, but a very different, eclectic podcast, Pablo Torre Finds Out. So we get into Pablo's podcast, what it's like to work for ESPN and Meadowlark, what it's like to have Dan Le Batard for a boss. And we get into some wild stories that I pitched to Pablo to see if they would be good for his podcast. So it's and we reminisce. Pablo worked at SI, so we have some SI reminiscing that goes on as well. So really great conversation with Pablo Torre. And then, of course, following Pablo, we have Train of Thoughts with my buddy Sal Licata. We read our Apple reviews from the month of June and get into some other topics. So excellent, excellent show here for you this week. All right, let's get to it. Pablo Torre, followed by Sal Licata and Train of Thoughts, all right here, right now, on SI Media with Jimmy Traina. All right, joining me now, I've been wanting to have him on for a while because he has quite a podcast going. Former colleague of mine from way back in the day. You guys know him from ESPN, and of course, he's the host of Pablo Torre Finds Out. He's Pablo Torre. Pablo, how's it going?
Jimmy, I remember stumbling into the SI offices invariably later than I should. People already irritated that this young a-hole is late to work. And walking by you, operating what felt like now the future, you were like blogging, you were doing stuff before lots of other people in this business. So this is a full circle thing for me. I am a little late today.
I appreciate that. Yeah, well, I was always there early in the office because of what I was doing. So I knew who was coming and going at all times. You, when you were at SI, you were really young when you were there, right?
Yeah, that was out of college. Fact checking. You know, I was at SI.com actually on your side of things as an intern. Doing like the Nathan's hot dog eating contest as like whatever. That was like what I was doing for .com. And then I was a fact checker at the magazine side, but we were all in the same weird family.
Yeah. It was, yeah, weird family. Yeah, I always, I don't know, back in those early days when I was doing Hot Clicks, it felt like I was the bastard child of the family when it came to the magazine side of things.
The internet wasn't important, Jimmy.
It was, yeah.
Who could have foreseen the internet being important to either of our lives?
I was selling the brand. So
absolutely.
I will never forget, Andrew Perloff had one of the great lines when, so I think the way it worked was, I think .com was on the 31st floor. And I think the magazine was on the 30th floor. And like the business side was on the 32nd floor. I think that's how it worked.
Some combination thereof.
Yeah. And I remember one day Perloff was like, you know, they hate you so much on the 30th floor. And I said, yeah, but they love me on the 32nd floor. So it all worked out. It all worked out. So how old were you when you, and how long were you at SI? Give people a little background.
Yeah, so I graduated from college in 07, showed up at SI October 1st, I think, thereabouts.
Wow.
And I was 21, I think, and stayed there. That was full time, again, bottom of the ladder, literally crossing out words in every single article that I was assigned to fact check. And I stayed there until 2012, left 5 years later, and joined ESPN.
Do you follow all of the SI drama closely? We've had a little bit of it in recent years.
I do. I stay in touch with a couple of folks who either left the business entirely, in some cases, went to go run teams and like, you know.
Oh, right.
Like Luke Wynn, the way.
Yeah.
Former SI.com, star is now the freaking GM of the Raptors G League team.
Yeah.
Love Luke. A bizarre trajectory for anybody to take. But I stay in touch with Luke and David Epstein, who is my like neighbor on that floor of people that may or may not have hated you. And we sort of commiserate about how this thing that we, again, all had a love-hate relationship in our own ways, is a total mess, is an utter mess, despite there still being good people sort of like at the core of it.
It's not a mess anymore, thank God. We have become unmessed in the last few months. So thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord.
For capitalism shining briefly, a kind ray upon the people that I like.
We're back to being a real company, normal company.
Yes,
not dysfunction 24/7. So it's nice. It is amazing. There, you know, you mentioned Luke Wynn, who was an SI.com writer. He wrote for the magazine as well. Great college basketball writer. He's a GM for the Raptors, the G League team. Is that what it is?
Yeah, just got that promotion not so long ago.
And so many, I feel like there are so many SI people who have left and are just, you know, I think of Mallory Rubin at The Ringer with this sponsor podcast. And now you've had success at ESPN, but I feel like this podcast of yours is really something else right now. It's really in its own space. And I know this is probably why people at the magazine hated me for so many years. I know you're not allowed to use this phrase. It's incorrect. It's bad grammar. It's bad English. But I'm going to use it anyway. Your podcast is so unique. It's unbelievably unique. So for people who don't know, but I'm sure you do, Pablo's podcast sets out to solve these things that you couldn't even imagine. You killed me with your episode on TRL being a scam as a MTV TRL fan. It killed me. But so tell me this. Let me start here. When you started the podcast and you're doing it for Meadowlark, and I want to get into like Meadowlark ESPN.
Sure.
Was this your idea? Did people help you craft the idea? And was it, you know, you need to be different now to stand out in the podcast space because there are only like 6 billion of them. Well, give me like the manifestation of the podcast.
Yeah. So Meadowlark came to me and was like, hey, can you do a daily podcast for us? And I said, let me think about that. I had just hosted ESPN Daily, which I love doing, but that was daily and it killed me by the end. And I said, I can't do that, but I understand that lots of podcasts is better than fewer podcasts when it comes to selling podcasts. And I said, okay, Let me do 3 days a week, but I want to do it in a way that sort of detaches me from what everybody else is trying to do. And so this uniqueness, this niche, this lane that no one else is running in was sort of a motive for me from the start, because of course I still do at ESPN. We can talk about this too, like Around the Horn PTI. I'm still living and dying on Twitter, much to the detriment of everybody who loves me. And so I'm fluent in like the news cycle and what the A block tends to be, but that's not what like actually excites my nerve endings when it comes to podcasting. The thing that I wanted to do, which was different by design and incidentally, was use journalism, which I learned at Sports Illustrated and then at ESPN, to solve these weird mysteries that no one else gives a crap about. And my mission was always, can I convince the listener to care about this? And so for me, it's informed directly by the magazine sensibility. You know, sometimes you wouldn't know what the best story in the magazine was going to be until you open it up and you're like, oh, wow, I just spent an hour of my life thinking about this thing. Yeah. And so people weren't really using journalism and storytelling in a format that, as you alluded to, is largely dominated by what I do in my other jobs, which is talk and debate about sports of the day. And the fact that no one else was trying to do this meant that, okay, if I can make this work and create episodes that are memorable, then maybe I can also expand the sort of aperture, the topic list, the rundown of like what stories count as mysteries for me to solve. And so Total Request Live, being spoiler alert, rigged from the beginning, not actually a democracy in any way,
tragic,
but funded by this cabal actually of like music executives behind the scenes. That was one of our initial heat checks of like, can we get people to trust me to tell them a story with a mystery being solved using, I say journalism in a sincere way, but also with the self-awareness of, I'm doing stupid things seriously and serious things stupidly. I will investigate billionaires in a real way and get right. the NBA league office mad at me. I will also care deeply about, let's pick a more recent one. You know, who is making the sex noises in the backdrop of Luka Doncic's presser, right? Like, I'm going to do high and low, and in the middle will be, I think, me for the first time in sort of three dimensions.
Well, that's why I say your podcast, again, I know you're not supposed to use the phrase, is very unique, because the spectrum is unbelievable, like you said. I mean, I've seen you do political stuff. I've seen you do, you know, stuff about workers, stuff about the, you know, real. And then, like you said, you're doing TRL. Just for shits and giggles, for my own amusement, how does the TRL podcast come about? Like, how did you know that there was something shady going on? Just give me some backstory on just that one specifically.
Yeah, so I'm always, I've been accused of having content brain. I'm always looking for episodes because I'm relentlessly refilling this furnace of content. But my content, as you now know, is stories and investigations. And so someone who works with me pointed out, Bradley Campbell pointed out, that he had heard a story in his own life. I'm always like soliciting sort of suggestions and just tips from people. And he was like, I heard about how these computer hackers were involved in rigging TRL. And I said, oh, crap, we should like look into that. Yeah. Bradley goes off and he's talking to me and we're sort of like planning like a story based around that premise, only to realize like halfway down the rabbit hole that that wasn't actually the story. That it wasn't that there was a vote being rigged by hackers. The vote itself was always fake. And it turns out that there was someone else who was on that same scent, who was in a parallel track, someone we did not know at all, named Yorgo, the guy who ended up being the guest on the show, who was like, I've also been looking into this. He didn't really know about the hacker stuff, but he had been sort of doing this documentary about the glory days of MTV in the 90s, when all of us sort of are most nostalgic. And he was like, oh, I have people who actually might go on the record to attest to how, from the inside of this secret closed-door meeting, they were manipulating stuff. And so that's an episode that's actually, it's demonstrative in the sense of, it doesn't start from like an A to B. It's more like A to B to C to D to E, back to C. So really, like, what I'm trying to say is that I've developed, and this is another way that my show is very different, it requires a team of people behind the scenes that also function as this weird newsroom. A newsroom that is devoted to these stories that, again, most people aren't thinking about. But if we use that practice of, like, what if we all get together and structure and report this as a team, then we can bring to the listener what feels like, in every episode, almost like a documentary-style conversation. And that's
must be nice
how
to
that
have
one...
It must be nice to have a team.
Jimmy, I see behind you, people who are not watching, I see behind you a whole squad of just interns.
Me and Shelby, basically. Yeah,
but to your point, right? Like when I joined Meadowlark and they were like, can you do a 5-day-a-week show? I was like, no, I can't do that. But what I want to do is actually like do something that feels like a show in like an old school way. Old school in the way that it feels like a magazine, has a newsroom, but also like requires a production staff. Because if I'm going to go and do this new job at a startup, I want to take a big swing. And it's going to be in a direction that no one else is going, but I want it to be big and feel that way if you like actually sample us and give us a shot. And so, yes, I am paying people to work on the show, which is a luxury, I acknowledge, that very few other shows have. And that's why I'm like caring so neurotically about every single episode.
Yeah. And, you know, the concept of a daily podcast blows my mind. Now, obviously, you did the daily at ESPN, but a totally different podcast that was sort of off the news and big investigation stories and had a news hook.
Yeah.
But I'm blown away. See, I don't know. I just think daily podcast, don't you need to give people time to listen to the podcast? If you're churning them out every day, okay, it's Wednesday, but I missed Pablo's Daily on Tuesday, but now it's Wednesday and the new one's out. Does that format work?
So it's a great question that I have grappled with and thought deeply about, right? So it works for news at the New York Times. The Daily is one of the most popular shows in podcasting, in part because I think everybody is like, everybody who reads the New York Times is like, I get up in the morning and I need to be told, what do I need to know about this thing that feels very important? And in sports, of course, as you know, like, we're all sampling different things. I have friends who know nothing about the NBA but know everything about baseball. and every iteration of that sort of dynamic. And so at ESPN Daily, we realized, okay, people aren't listening to every episode because A, there's no urgency in that sense of like, you got to know about the, you don't really need to know about the Stanley Cup final if you don't care about hockey, unfortunately. Right. But from a, like, this is important to know about perspective, we're a daily news show perspective. That's not what people are feeling. Also, what you said is true. It's just so much content. And right. so even three times a week is what I do now, by the way.
Yeah.
I struggle with the idea that, like, the compliment I will pay us is also a criticism of us in this way. It kind of feels like we're a stack of magazines piling up in your bathroom sometimes.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you'll get to us, which is why I designed these episodes, too, to be more evergreen. Because it's sort of like...
Which is, I think that's the way, I mean, I sort of am in this, you know, if I do an interview, like last week I had Derek Jeter on, like, you can listen to that any day. Like, it doesn't have to be, I think that's... For me, that's how I have to do it. I couldn't do it where, oh, the next day it's garbage. Well, not garbage, but you know what I mean.
No, but disposability is a problem online. Yeah. You know that. You were churning out blog posts every morning before everybody else was awake. And so for me, it's how can I make something that lasts? And it's like, let's do evergreen stories that sort of function as a library. And so even if you don't get to it this week, because three times a week is a lot, and people are listening to a million different things, you can get to it later and we can sort of benefit from like, like a catalog of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you did, I'm thinking recently too, that podcast you did about Michael Jordan's stats.
You're right.
An NBA fan can listen to that anytime and they will be awfully amused. I can tell you that.
Yeah,
so,
or infuriated.
Was there a lot of backlash? You know, people don't like when you sort of, you know, dump on Michael Jordan. Not that you were dumping, but
no,
you know.
Look, I've been at war with the Jordan family.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Marcus Jordan and Larsa Pippen called me miserable in the New York Post, which was.
Well, I'm going to be bad host. Tell me what made you do that podcast.
Yes. Okay. So great example of stupid thing done seriously, where it was like, there was a time, Jimmy, let's remember this time, when people didn't really know what was up with like Marcus and Larsa as this concept. It was sort of like they were popping up and it was weird and it was tabloidy and it sort of lived in that world. But it wasn't really sort of mainstreamed into sports conversation. And the entire time I was thinking about how this is the weirdest story in sports that people aren't talking enough about. And so we got to a certain point where I was like, yes, this is clearly, you know, it's almost like this bizarro Romeo and Juliet situation. Of course, Michael and Scotty hate each other.
Right.
But now his son and his ex-wife in Michael and Scotty's situations respectively are together and they're going to get married. And what is this real? Was the question is like, is this actually worth me thinking about seriously, as stupid as it is? And the key part there was, can we actually talk to them? Because it's one thing to sort of like aggregate these headlines, but actually interviewing them using, again, journalism to an arguably stupid but serious purpose of like, is this relationship real, was something that really was the key to that episode. And so Marcus and Larsa showed up together on a Zoom call and we interviewed them. And I thought it went great. And it sort of was presented, though, within a story structure in which I expressed great cynicism around how they were manipulating the attention economy and reality television to make themselves more famous and or fill gaping voids in their souls from being the other person in the picture, right? Like not the star, the other person. And when they listened to the episode, which culminated in, again, a sincere conversation in which I felt like, oh, wait, these people might actually, they're spending so much time together. Like in the end, I was like, go with God if this is what you guys are really up to. But they heard the sort of context for it, which was cynical, and they hated my guts.
So that's fascinating to me. So you thought it went well, and then they blasted you afterwards. Now, do you think, was it a situation where, because this happens to every podcast now, where sites aggregate and they put, you know, I just not to keep making it about me, but when I had Jeter on last week, I had asked him about the one Hall of Fame voter who didn't vote for him.
Yes.
And he's like, you know, I get sick of answering that question. He's the one who should answer it. And then, but he was very like calm about it. And then the headlines are, you know, Derek Jeter blasts, rips and all that stuff. Was that what happened with you guys? Or like, so why the disconnect where you thought it was great and they then blasted you?
It was an internet sort of story insofar as the episode is published. It gets aggregated. There are all these clips on our social accounts and others. And the comment sections were just so cruel.
Okay.
Like, so we provided, I thought, a thoughtful look over 50 minutes of like, this is how this is a story about Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, as much as it is Larsa and Marcus, and everyone was just like making fun of them, roasting them, because this is how the internet works. Of course, this is, by the way, what they signed up for, I would argue. But no one's skin is actually thick enough, even if they're like reality television stars. None of us as people have thick enough skin. And so they
when that internet machine goes 24/7 turning on you, no one can handle it. Yeah.
And I get it. So anyway, that's how that wound up with a headline saying that I was miserable in the New York Post, which again, I also signed up for. So all good.
And then made your Twitter handle.
I did. And I just recently had to take it down because I've been, people don't understand where it came from at this point. And I'm like, I should probably just rechristen myself as Normal Pablo Torre. Yeah.
Got it. All right. I want to get into some other things with Metal Law and Ease. Let me do that. So I kind of, now every now and again, and I'll probably do it soon because now we're in the dead time here of sports until we get football going. Once in a blue moon, I'll go on Twitter and I'll say, tell me who you'd like to hear on the SI Media podcast. Give me some guest suggestions. But in reality, I'm sure you have this. Everyone has a podcast, has this. I have so many people in my life, friends, family, even if you just meet someone who finds out what you do. When they start this sentence with the words, you know who you should have on your podcast, I cringe because it's always like, you know, Bill Simmons, The Rock.
Yeah,
and, you know, totally. Thanks for the suggestions. So I don't want to do this if you hate that too, but I have some topics I wanted to throw at you.
Oh, please.
To see if these would be good for Pablo Torre finds out.
I love nothing more. I mean that. So
Your podcast is different. So you need these ideas, I would imagine.
I need tips because I need to sort of always replenish. And also you're right that like my dad will be like, you should have Elon Musk on your podcast. Right. I'm like, Dad, come on, man.
Right.
Love you, but I do need incoming. So please proceed.
Yeah. Like the Yankee fans in my family, why don't you have Aaron Judge on? Well, it's a media podcast and it doesn't work that way. So, all right, I'm going to throw out a handful of things, and I want you to just tell me, like, if you would consider this topic, it's a stupid, don't be nice. Tell me, Jimmy, you're an asshole.
I love this exercise.
Okay. Can we get to the bottom of the Kevin Costner, Cal Ripken tale? Where would that fit into Pablo Torre Finds Out?
There was a podcast that someone else did about this. Run series. That was good, and it dissuaded me from, this is high on the list. So people who don't know, right, the whole thing is that...
It's a phenomenal story.
It's a phenomenal story involving the cucking of Cal Ripken Jr.
Right.
In which...
Well, basically, yeah, you yeah, tell please, you,
No, no, I look, Cal Ripken Jr.'s streak was threatened because Kevin Costner was sleeping with his wife, allegedly. Cal's wife, allegedly, yes? And so there
Cal
was
Cal walked in.
Cal walked in to realize he was being cucked by Kevin Costner. And so that day, Cal was so distraught he couldn't play in the game, and the streak was jeopardized. And so they pulled the power at Camden Yards to cancel the game so that the streak could continue. And this is a thing that I have heard about in various forms from variously reliable people. And so I am going to do my version of this at some point. Jimmy, this is a good but common suggestion, I would say.
Okay.
But it's a really good story.
Because we all want it to be true. We all want it to be true.
And
here's the thing. Why I want it to be true, I don't even care about the scandalous thing that Kevin Costner was supposedly saying. The Orioles pulling the power. That's the part of the story that is the best part of the whole story.
Yes. What will you do to preserve a streak?
Right.
You will do anything, including pulling the power plug to the stadium. Yeah.
This one's a little more serious, but I think a lot of, I always get people wanting, what exactly happened with the Tiger Woods car accident? Not the one on Thanksgiving when Elon beat him up, but the other one that he basically said to the media, don't bother finding out what's going on. And the media was like, well, yes, you're Tiger Woods. We do whatever you say. So we're not going to bother finding out what happened.
Yeah, I will say this without spoiling it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was in an editorial meeting yesterday in which we were going over what's coming up in the docket. And we're going to do our own version of a Tiger Woods story, not through the lens of that specifically, but it will be touched on. Because we're at this point, Jimmy. So this is, I rank this as generally good, specifically not what I'm going to do with this. And the reason is, Tiger, as you know, Tiger is saying stuff and doing stuff, and he's back. And he's, I watch him. I look at his face and I'm like, this is a man who every day grapples with his own mortality. And there's something different about him. He looks not just older, but also just like
defeated,
and worn down in the way that only like a former immortal slash dad, I think, would feel.
Yeah.
And so we're Tiger has a good Tiger treatment that gets to the core of what's going on. Is
that'll do really well. All right, this one is current, very current. And it's one simple question. Why? Why did Tom Brady agree to do the roast? Like, there were these stories. He got $50 million, he got $10 million, he got $5 million. He doesn't need the money. Why did he say yes to that? Forget the stuff with the kids, Giselle. Why?
I have my own theory on this, and I will tell you how I looked into this with the eye of, like, there's something to do with the roast. So, number one, my theory on this just personally is Tom Brady was so desperate to be liked that he was like, okay, people think I'm inhuman, I'm a robot. I'm about to go into the booth for Fox and get paid $1 zillion. I kicked out Greg Olson. I need to prove that I'm likable. So basically, he invited the world to like tenderize him into likability. Like, beat me up so much that I become like this underdog character. But what happened in the roast, as you saw, was that he revealed himself to just be very weird in key ways. Like the Bob Kraft thing, where it's like, you can say anything you want about anybody in my life, but don't make Bob Kraft hand job jokes.
Right.
And that part, was that real? Was that objection that he had to the Bob Kraft joke being said real, where he goes up and whispers into the ear of the comedian, don't say that shit? That seems by all accounts real. And so what I wanted to do actually, and I still may do this, was like, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to do a full investigation, a reopening of the Bob Kraft Orchids of Asia story. Like, I want to actually see what happened there.
Right.
And let's actually make this even more public. And so I'm looking into that story just if only to kind of troll Tom Brady and bring justice, perhaps, in the process.
I mean, there's also, I mean, I guess there's a story to be done somewhere along the line of why a 24-year-old would date Bill Belichick. And those Patriots have a lot of issues.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot going on. Bill Belichick. Without spoiling it entirely, also. I'm interested in his personal life. Yeah.
All right, I got two more, and this is another person whose personal life, I guess, could be investigated. Forget the COVID stuff and forget the vaccine. But what turned Aaron Rodgers into like just almost Alex Jones territory? Like, listen, you don't want to get the COVID vaccine. There's millions and millions and millions of people in your boat. But if you've heard him on some of the recent, like, really wacky out there podcasts, like, he's full blown, like, QAnon almost.
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen to an NFL quarterback?
Dude, I listened to almost 3 hours of him on a Patreon paywalled podcast.
Yeah.
Talk about Tartaria, the QAnon of architecture. I'm like, what is happening?
That's the one that people didn't hear because it was Patreon. And that's the one where you realize this is nothing. Forget COVID and the vaccine. Like, he's on another level.
This angle on Aaron Rodgers, I fully co-sign. You don't need to do any of the politics stuff to just have the clear evidence that this guy is nuts now. And so here's what I'll say about Aaron Rodgers, because, of course, I'm always looking into, like, what's there to do with this man? His big complaint is that the media attacks him. And I think it's irresponsible for me to traffic in, like, the conspiracies about him, theories about him, Jimmy, that I think everybody in the media has heard, but have not been said aloud, really. And I just want to point out that he has been protected in ways that have been remarkable when it comes to rumors about his personal life. Some of it's out there in sort of like Twitter's talk, but like there's a lot of stuff that people aren't saying because we're actually, I think, largely more responsible than he gives the media credit for even. Right. And so that vague entry point makes me wonder, like, how is this all connected, right?
Right, like, exactly.
He's hiding stuff, Jimmy. And I, look, whether it's Levitard or Mina Kimes, my friends who like, who have interviewed him, known him, spent time with him in person, what's very clear is that he is just very different. And he's also protesting way too much. And that's the molten core of him is something that he's afraid of people finding out.
Right.
And I do want to get to that.
Yeah, it's like, it just does, the the full-blown conspiracy theorist doesn't add up with his, because his whole shtick is, the media is bad, don't give me attention, but I'm going to say all this crazy stuff. So like, that's the game, which I get. It's, I'm the victim, the media does this, and then, oh, but I, you know, and his whole thing is wordplay. His whole thing is word salads, and then I didn't say, you know, immunized. When he goes on a podcast and he goes, you know, oh, you know, it was the day that JFK Jr.'s plane went down and Hillary Clinton, you know, well, that's interesting. Well, I never said Hillary Clinton had anything to do. No, but you did the, like, that whole game, how people don't see that game, I don't understand. And then it's the media's basically a big bunch of bastards. Like, it's bizarre.
Yeah,
it's bizarre.
He thinks he's really clever. And right. Because he's sort of, like, gotten away with it largely, I get why he feels that way. But if you do a close reading, he's one of those people who's almost like trying to thread a needle in his mind of like, I'm not technically lying, even though I'm being extraordinarily dishonest. And it just, there's a calculation, there's a strategy here, which, I mean, from his family.
It's absolutely strategic, yeah.
From his family to his romantic life, he's trying to discredit the people who may one day say the thing that he's terrified of people saying. Is how I feel about him.
Okay. This one hits a little close to home. It may not get to you. But we've seen now with the legalization of gambling, players in every sport end up... Now, we haven't had major players. I guess Calvin Ridley, probably the big... I am fascinated by these players. Like a Calvin Ridley, who's making $10 million a year. What prompts him to open a DraftKings account? Like, how do we get to that step? It's so hammered home in every sport. The one thing you don't do is bet. The one thing you don't do is bet. And is it just because it's on the phone and the access now? Have players always been gambling and we didn't know it? But these players getting suspended now in every sport, it's like, how are you doing this?
You know what it reminds me of? So I did a story for SI about how and why athletes go broke, right?
Yes. Very famous story, yeah.
Yeah, it was like one of the, still maybe the thing that people most remember in terms of anything I've written. Yeah. What was remarkable about that story that I learned was that, and this is sort of true of everybody, so not just athletes, but with athletes in particular, it's true. Stuff you think they're above and that they don't need to do because it makes no financial sense. Like, why risk this if bankruptcy is a possible consequence? Why invest in this thing if you have no idea what it is? That has returned, in my view, when it comes to gambling. And it's become more accessible, as you pointed out correctly, because it's on your phone.
Right.
And I think it's just, it's a symptom of there's a high associated with a high upside. Like an actual like high, like almost like a drug-like high, neurologically.
Yeah.
With like, I'm going to roll the dice here if this pays off. It's not even about the logic ever. It's about the feeling of what if it hits.
Right.
And that, I think, by the way, and of course, like we're sponsored by DraftKings. And so we are in this situation where we have to be both clear-eyed and fair and honest about like all of it. And I aspire to be. But I also think it's undeniable that the human brain responds to those stimuli in ways that are illogical and dangerous. And we need to be very careful about what we're incentivizing before it gets beyond our control.
That would, yeah, make sense. That would be it. Because I think people see the stories about an athlete that gets suspended, and it's not about the money. They're not looking for the, they're not
Correct.
Looking to make the money. Right.
No, it's, right. I mean, look, in Jonte Porter's case, by the way, and by the way, in defense of like the legalized gambling of all of this, I should say, I am beyond my own conflict of interest to DraftKings. I personally believe that it's better to have this legalized than not.
Right, right.
And in fact, the catching of Jonte Porter, for instance, is proof that, okay, you're not going to always get away with this. And that is a function of sunlight being the best disinfectant, blah, 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 right. blah, blah. But in right. terms of like, why was he doing it? I also think in the Jonte Porter case, it was like, who are you hanging out with, man? Like, he has this group chat of like crypto people, and he's like, yo, guys, this might be a RICO violation. You know, that I'm just like, so there's also just abject stupidity, also.
Right.
And that's probably part of the story.
Yeah. Last one, because I just thought of it while we were speaking earlier. Yeah. Can you find one woman in this world who was given a gift basket by Derek Jeter, who denies ever giving the gift baskets?
It's such a good. Okay. So. This This is something that has somehow not been on my list of stories, and now okay. It officially is. I'm greenlighting this story, Jimmy. I love. So there are a couple. I'm not going to say it on air, but I'll say it to you once we get off air.
Yeah.
There are a couple of Yankee stories. Mysteries
I'm sure.
That yeah. I grew up a Yankee fan. I'm in New York. That yeah. I am actively. I've been working on for months. That are absurd and silly and serious and mostly silly. This one though. You are getting a credit. You're getting a production
Thank
credit.
You. I'll
if
take
I ever
it.
Pull this off.
Well, the fascinating thing is how many people believe that story to be true. Like,
correct.
I think more than 50% think it's true. So, all right. That was fun. Let me ask you a couple of questions just about the business. So, you were at ESPN for a while, and you're doing the daily, and you appear on a lot of the shows around the Horn and Levitar and PTI, and then you made your deal with Meadowlark. Now, in the past, it used to be like you would never see ESPN talent get shared. That was never heard of. Was it easy for you to get that okay from ESPN? Would you have left ESPN to go to Meadowlark? Tell me how like the combo deal works out for you.
It was shockingly diplomatic, and I did not expect it to happen for the reason you said. No one, and by the way, I believe to date, no one really has this arrangement. And so I'm kind of like straddling this line of diplomacy every day. But it was a very straightforward proposal, which is I'm going to be full-time at Meadowlark doing this weird podcast, which you probably won't care about because it's not competing with your things, do my own thing. And they were like, cool. What was very important to them when I negotiated this was that I not appear on air for like a direct linear sports television competitor. It's like, don't go to Fox Sports 1, don't go to Peacock or NBC Sports. And I was like, cool, no, I can still be exclusive to you guys when it comes to sports television. And in exchange, I'll be a part-time employee. I'll do the shows that still want me as I've been doing them for now 12 years around the Horn of PTI, the Ride Home Projects shows. And I'm like sort of like just a family member over there at that point. So it was sort of like, let me just keep doing my thing, this like weird subgroup inside of the ESPN sort of universe. Those shows are different. They're not Bristol based, right? They're out of DC. They're not like produced out of the larger ESPN universe in the way that even First Take is. And so it was sort of like, okay, so he can sort of be constrained in this world. But it was really important to me because I'm of a generation where TRL was important. Television matters to me still.
Right.
I'm still a cable TV guy.
Right.
So I still want to keep doing those.
Right. It's funny, but I do think it's so funny to me just because of the way the business has changed and where we're at now that the ESPN logic there is interesting to me because I feel like way, way, way more people will see you on a Meadowlark YouTube video than if you were on FS1, which nobody watches during the day. So it's interesting.
Jimmy, I will tell you that a thing that still has not caught up with reality,
is
how media companies see the internet.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable to me.
Yeah.
And so I am grateful for the difference of priorities and incentives, let's say, right? It's still a television company. The shows matter the most to them. But for me, when it came to like, can I do both? It was, can you prove your worth on TV such that we don't have to worry about the stuff you're saying? And the different era, by the way, of just like sharing employers now. I will point to Stephen A. Smith's podcast, right? And like, just see what he's doing over there. And you will get a sense of the greater freedom now that's available, certainly to the biggest stars. That sort of trickles down as you get through the talent hierarchy where it's like, if he's okay with, if they're okay with him, literally at one point, I believe, endorsing Chris Christie as a presidential nominee. If they're okay with him talking about basically being a love doctor and arguing about like Pokemon, then there is a greater berth that people are granted as long as you still do the thing we need you to do contractually on TV.
Right. Now, with the podcast, with Pablo Torre Finds Out, is Dan Levitard your direct boss?
It's such a funny thing to say, but I think so. Yes.
What is it like having Dan Levitard as your direct boss?
It's a nightmare. And also the greatest thing that's happened to me. Dan is somebody who does not have... If you've ever listened to his show, you know this because he says it a lot. Like, he doesn't want to do the business stuff.
Right. Right.
He just cares about his show. And what Dan has always been at ESPN for me is somebody who, like, will boost people that he believes in, even if it seems like they're doing weird shit.
Yeah.
And so Dan has been incredibly supportive, using his sort of like army of insane people to be like, hey, check out this guy. You may know him from the time that he, let's say, dressed up in an orca suit and interviewed Jesse Ventura on ESPN Radio in 2014 with me, which is a thing that actually happened. But also he's doing this weird thing with journalism. And so is Dan approving my expense reports? No. Is Dan giving me sort of feedback on shows? Yes.
Okay.
Is he involved in any part of the production process of the show? No. Is he the most important person at the company? Yes. And so inside of that, you get a sense of like he's a non-boss, sort of a boss, which is working for me because that's kind of what I'm looking for.
Do you hear from him about every podcast or just once in a while?
He subscribes to the newsletter, Pablo.show, in which he gets an email every morning when I release an episode, and he will often remark upon it. But also, like, Dan is a guest on my show every now and again. And so in a sense, my main form of interaction with Dan is through my show in these ways. And that speaks to both of our – and by the way, what Dan does still today, 5 days a week – mm-hmm. And he does 4 hours of content a day.
I know.
And it's just a tonnage that any free time he has that he uses on anything that's not just that, I am so grateful for, because I can't imagine how to have a life in which that's my daily obligation.
Yeah. Let me, you obviously, we all know J.J. Redick was just hired as the Lakers head coach. You had J.J. on in January, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the theme of the podcast was him coaching little kids, basically.
Yeah, 9 year
olds. 8, 9 year olds. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Did you think then he'd be a head coach so soon? Like, tell me.
Yeah. No, so this is my, I'm glad you asked about this because I think that the meme about JJ has been backwards since he got, and I haven't talked about this yet, so I appreciate the opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think it's been backwards since he got announced as the coach because all these memes have come out where it's like, previous coaching experience, like Brooklyn Basketball Academy, like fourth graders. And like, I'm the guy who did the episode about that. I watched him coach 9 year olds, including his son. I talked to him about getting thrown out of games while he was coaching 9 year olds by referees. Right. And I think what people don't realize is that JJ ended up coaching 9 year olds because he turned down coaching opportunities in the NBA. So he was offered a job as an assistant with the Celtics, was offered a job as an assistant, I believe, with the Raptors. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. Not the right situation. I have this whole like media empire I'm building. I'm going to get my coaching sort of itch scratched by coaching my son and his friends.
Right.
And the thing that people got backwards is not that all he's done is coach 9 year olds. It's the dude is so obsessed with basketball, like a true sicko, like an obsessive, that he was designing plays for 9 year olds as if he was an NBA coach.
Yeah.
He cared about it so much he was getting thrown out of games. It was ridiculous that he was doing this. Yep. Like, that's the actual story. And so when he gets hired as the coach of the Lakers, of course it's true. He's never coached in the NBA, all of that, yes. But if you see him not as like podcaster who coached kids, but rather longtime NBA veteran who can't stop thinking about basketball to the point where his free time is invested in deeply obsessively caring about drawing up like horns plays. Yep. For 9 year olds, you're like, of course he's going to end up a coach this entire time, which was sort of like where the podcast landed, was he's going to do the thing that he can't stop doing.
It's funny. I just remember too that I remember it was like a Saturday morning, I think, and I'm scrolling through Instagram stories and he's there coaching his kid's game. And I sent him a message. I'm like, didn't you call a West Coast game for ESPN? Like, yes. Weren't you in Golden State last night? And he's like, I couldn't miss that. Ad. You know, like, yeah, basketball junkie to the nth degree.
Like a maniac. Like people, yeah. I want people to understand this too about JJ, who I really like. JJ presents as like, you know, clean cut, handsome, suit and tie. Like he's a business executive of some kind. The dude is a psychopath.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And what he's psychotic about is basketball. And if you ever listen to like his shows and like even the interview I did with him in which he sort of like opened up as a human more as a father, it was still like he is congenitally unable to stop obsessing And it comes in the most precise, detailed ways that, again, watching him try to relate to children, including his own son, was like, this man is doing stuff that is just so profoundly weird because he's not doing the thing that he was meant to do, which is go be in the NBA and like live there forever.
I think it's going to be fascinating to watch him as the Lakers coach too.
Oh, it's just what I told JJ was like when he got the job, I was like, you lived and died as a podcaster, and in death, you gave us all takes. So yeah, he's a content creator till the very end. Yeah. Like what a story. It's insane. It's insane that it happened as much as it's something that I think I saw coming.
Yeah, I agree. Let me circle back. I should have asked you this when we were discussing the ESPN Meadowlark situation. Sure. I've seen you a few times recently on Morning Joe. Obviously, we have an election coming up where I've said this on this podcast now for the last couple of months. I don't think people fully understand how batshit things are going to get. And it's going to be fascinating to see how the sports world ends up getting involved because you're going to have all these sports people weighing in with their opinions, and then it's going to be the whole stick to sports thing and who's going to get in trouble and blah, blah, blah. It's coming. Whether people realize it, it's coming. Do you have, now with ESPN, like you said, Stephen A's out there endorsing people, and you're on Morning Joe. Do you have to be mindful, like when you're doing a Morning Joe, oh, well, I still have this part-time gig with ESPN. I got to be careful or let it fly?
It's a great question, man. This is also new territory for me. So in my contract, I have full freedom to appear on news channels. Nice. So I've been doing Morning Joe like once or twice a week since the beginning of football season last year. And so I'm kind of like a part of that family, if I may be so bold as to say, in the rotation of just like people who sit around a table and do like, honestly, sports radio style political talk.
Yep.
And I don't worry about it, which is something that's unthinkable to the old me of like, I'm going to talk about Donald Trump regularly and not worry about what ESPN is going to say to me because of the contract, but also because I think the one wrinkle in this election cycle that's different from the previous one is that it feels like there's just a numbness to the idea that Trump is this character and people are very mad at him. Where before it was like, I wonder if an ESPN personality is going to like break the seal and say what they really think. Everybody kind of knows how everybody feels right now.
Right.
And so the idea of like, guess what happened?
Yeah.
Pablo Torre criticized Trump on MSNBC. It's sort of like, of course he did. Like Stephen A. Smith said he's a better presidential candidate than next. It's like, of course he did. And up and up and up. So to me, I just think as much as people are not prepared for the, and I think this is 1,000,000% true, the way in which this presidential election is going to eat everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to eat everything. Ratings. I think ratings, and this is something that I monitored at ESPN, just like ratings, right? If there's a big debate, and we'll see this, of course, on Thursday. If there's a big debate, if there's a big news story, the community of people who still watch cable television will move to that. Sports will be paid attention to less, and people will watch politics. It's not all separate audiences when it comes to cable TV. And so I think in ways that people aren't ready for, the oxygen in the room is going to be directed towards this wildly, wildly awful conversation we're all going to have in which people are going to dislike each other, and athletes will say things that they'll get in trouble for, but probably not as much just because people now know, like, wait, LeBron thinks Donald Trump is a bum. Like, if he tweets you bum out, you know, in 2024,
nothing like the last time. Yeah.
We're going to be like, of course he did, in the same way that, you know, all of us have. We've been on the record.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, it's interesting you say that because I wonder if there's so much fatigue with it. If, see, I'm almost in the opposite boat. I think you're going to see the, I don't think the sports ratings are going to dip as much as they did. The last time was a huge dip.
It was crazy. You're right.
It was huge. I don't think it's going to be as bad this time because I do think there's a lot of fatigue with both candidates, both sides. Everyone hates each other. Like you said, everyone knows how everyone thinks. No one's going to come in and say something shocking at this point. So it'll be interesting, though. Maybe the freak show of it all sucks people back in.
I think you're right in terms of it's just not as exotic or novel now. That's definitely true. But the freak show can always get weirder.
That's
and
true.
There might just be something that happens. Pick any sort of Mad Lib sentence. And it's like, and now we're all talking about this thing. So I'm just prepared to be, I'm prepared to be appalled in ways that I feel like I'm over, I guess is what I'm predicting.
I got you on that. Last thing before I let you go, do you? I've said it now many times. You have the most unique podcast out there in the sports field. Do you have a favorite episode? Was there one episode where you were like, "That is as good as it gets for me"?
So I have so many. Again, I'm not going to give you a cop out answer. Like
no, that's what, you could say because I hate that question too. Someone's like, "Who's your favorite person to interview?" I can't answer that question. So,
but there is one specific one that I'm just so satisfied to have solved because it's a. And I'll cater it to you because you're a New York guy. Yep. We did an episode about the tape that Madison Square Garden, Jim Dolan made to recruit LeBron.
Right.
And it was a thing that was an enormous, almost urban legend.
Yeah.
Because, spoiler alert, literally might be the last thing James Gandolfini did on camera before he died was revive the role of Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
And it gets weirder from there. And so it's just one of those things where there's been no episode quite like that one where I am the only person to have gotten the actual tape.
Yeah.
And on the tape was stuff far beyond the Sopranos thing that kind of blew my mind. And it sort of told the story not just of how the Knicks operate behind closed doors and who's in the family of James Dolan, as it were, who's in his network of like super friends. But it also established like how much time has passed and how much has happened, even in what feels in retrospect like a pretty recent event. Like this was the decision era. This was like the summer of LeBron. And you go back and you're like, wait a minute. Rudy Giuliani's on this tape?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Donald Trump is on this tape?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Harvey Weinstein is on this tape. So just in that span of time, it went from like, this was weird then, but now it's like, what planet was that? And so that's one of those where it's like, I don't know if I'll ever be allowed back into Madison Square Garden, but I'm just like, go watch that episode if you want a sense of like how we treat a story that both is something that no one's thinking about, but has enough there where it's like, oh, this is a story for everybody as much as it is for Knicks fans, it seems.
They definitely have you on the facial recognition. There's no doubt at MSG. It's funny because I remember that and that story blew up because, I mean, like you said, you have Trump and Weinstein and Giuliani, but the Sopranos thing is really what made that story blow up and where I saw it all. And it was funny because I remembered after your story came out and I saw that, that I remember hearing about this video because Howard Stern was asked to do the video. And at that time, Howard would talk about it on the air and be like, these assholes want me. I'm not doing a fucking video for LeBron James. And, you know, Howard railed about it for days that they asked him and he refused to do it. So I knew about the tape. I didn't realize that James Gandolfini and Edie Falco had done a scene for
as their characters, which people thought that. Yeah. That James, of course, was rest his soul, legitimately one of the great actors of all time, was overplaying. Anyway, there's just, and then you sort of get to the point of like, what's it like to watch someone create like a super sweet, again, MTV reference, a super sweet 16 video for LeBron James, and it's like, oh, well, we're also going to do the thing where we do multiple takes, where we'll switch out LeBron's name and add in Dwayne, so we have these alternate takes that no one has seen, where Edie Falco is playing Carmella and she says, Dwayne. Your friend Chris, that other player, just like alt takes to send out to these guys. And it's just
that's crazy.
Something they were never, anyone was supposed to see wound up on my show because that's what my life is now, apparently. Yeah.
That's great. I remember, I think Howard was like, you know, what, LeBron James is going to come here because I'm in a video? Who thinks of this stupid, you know, when you think about it? Yeah, I don't know if a video is going to.
Fair point.
Get LeBron.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, like I said, Pablo has a podcast you must check out. Pablo Torre Finds Out. It's with the Metal Arc company there, run by Dan Lebatard. And I enjoyed this thoroughly. Thank you for coming on. And hopefully we'll see you again soon down the road.
Yeah, Jimmy. It's always good to relive our glory days
of SI.
Of a floor of people who may or may not have hated both of us, but now I think about very fondly.
And we had three floors back then.
Dude, we had a library.
Yeah, the library.
Oh, my God. Just all of these things that no longer exist in any form anywhere.
When I first started, I was in that library all the time, and Frank DeFord would walk in. Literally the nicest human being who's ever lived. I always have to say that when I think of it. The SI library always makes me think of Frank DeFord.
I think I stole accidentally some books from the library, which I guess now, you know,
maybe a
future episode. Will I ever get prosecuted by Sports Illustrated?
Yeah. That's a good one. We'll look out for it on Pablo Torre Finds Out. Thanks, man.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Joining me now, as he does every week, for our Train of Thoughts segment from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY TV in New York, my buddy Sal Licata. Sal, how's it going?
Very nice. Enjoying the day today. Derek Jeter's birthday. Your guest, of course.
You know, I didn't have many regrets when the Jeter interview was over. I went through when I had Deitch on last week after Jeter before you. I went into with Deitch how I hated the Tom Brady interview. The Jeter interview I liked. The only question I forgot to bring up was he had this big birthday coming up and how he felt about it. So I that one I wrote it in my notes and I just didn't see it during the interview. So, but you know that might have not went over well with him anyway. So we kept Derek happy and that's the most important thing.
Yeah. No, that's 50. Yeah. I was surprised to see that. It just, you know, certain things you just don't think are possible. When you see Derek Jeter turns 50, it's, you know, eye opening. Yeah.
I told him this on the, I remember his first, well, his first game was in 95 in Seattle, but I'm talking about, I remember opening day of 96, him hitting the home run, Phil Rizzuto, you know, because he had told me his favorite announcer was Phil Rizzuto, who, when I was a kid, like people say, what did you want to be when you were growing up? What did you, I wanted to be Phil Rizzuto when I was growing up. So he had Derek say that was his favorite announcer. The whole thing was just crazy last week, but, I remember his first game in 96 and now he's 50 and the Yankees are an embarrassment. So. It's a long way from the Derek Jeter era, that's for sure. Where's Gene Michael and Bob Watson when you need them?
Did you enjoy that ass whooping last night?
I mean, how are the Yankees going to win with that lineup?
Yeah, it's pathetic. And right, why would you pitch to Judge if you're the Mets? Walk him. Do not pitch to him ever and let anybody else try to beat you.
When the GM has a job for life for no reason, they can put out a lineup like that. And I mean, the Yankees are in this weird spot where they have the best. Well, I don't know if they still do after this losing streak, but up until a few days ago, they had the best record in baseball and the team's a complete mess. And again, the GM just gets a total free pass. Like, oh, whatever. So we'll see. Where do I want to begin? You know, I have to say, I know golf is not your thing. It's not my thing either. But there was a big thing on Sunday with these protesters interrupting the travelers.
Yeah.
And I understand, like, I understand that people get mad because the people who are doing the protesting and interrupting are, like, climate control people. So they, you know, they're out there interrupting and people. But here's what I just want to say, okay? Deep down, deep down, everybody loves when protesters interrupt a sporting event because it gives you something to talk about. It gives you something to complain about. Like, let's not, the high and mighty, like, can you believe these assholes? Okay, I get it. You think they're an asshole because they're protesting climate change. Fine. But when someone runs on the field of any sporting event, deep down, every sports fan likes it. It gives you a little something extra. You don't act like it's all high and mighty nonsense.
Yeah.
I have to get that off my chest.
I respect that. I didn't really care enough about the event nor the protest. I'd be lying to you if I said it didn't cross my mind thinking, God, these protesters are such annoying assholes. Like,
no, it's not annoying. It's a little excitement in the middle of a sporting event.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe you handle it better than I would, but if they're protesting in the streets preventing me from getting home.
That's different.
Yeah. Well,
Well, here's my thing. I'm lumping protesters in with, like, even just like a drunk nut job who runs on the field. I'm looking like it's all the same to me. You know, think about how much times have changed. We're so old. We remember when we were kids and we didn't realize at the time what that's, but like, remember the Morgana, the kissing bandit running on the field, kissing baseball. Now, when she would run on, now granted, okay, it's a woman. And she's out there with, like, you know, two cantaloupes on her chest bouncing around. And she kisses who's ever playing shortstop or whatever.
All right.
You didn't have 50 security guards running on the... Like, they let her do her thing. Today, there's 5,000 security guards ready to trample at any moment. So, like, okay. Whether it's someone running on the field, whether it's a protester, like... I hate the, like, can you believe this guy's interrupting? Okay, it's relaxed. We'll be fine. We'll get it. Like, when Kevin Harlan's doing the play-by-play, everyone gets a kick out of it.
Right.
So, have fun. Don't get worked up. Everyone gets worked up. Now, did you see any of the videos? I hope you did, but I'm going to guess you didn't. Of Jerry Seinfeld with the protesters at his show.
I did see that one, yeah. Or at least one recently, last week maybe, that in Australia, was it, that he got on?
Yes, yes. Yeah. How brilliant is Jerry? How brilliant.
Yeah, he's great. Unfazed by it. It's just stupid nonsense that these people are trying to spew at him, and he handles it like a pro.
He's like, what are you? He's like, you're not doing anything. You're not accomplishing anything.
Right, exactly. Neither of these idiots who interrupt the golf or whatever they're interrupting.
I just like watching everyone get so, oh my God, they're interrupting. Okay. It's all right. Yeah. We'll survive. Do you have a problem with JJ Redick saying, I don't give a fuck at a press conference?
I have a problem with JJ Redick. I just think he's arrogant, smug. I don't like him. Now, do I think it's the biggest deal in the world, him cursing? No, but if I think he's arrogant and smug to begin with, and this is his introductory press conference, and he's trying to win over the media and fans, that's not the way that I would do it.
Well, I don't think he's trying to win over the media and the fans. I don't think he has any. I think he could care less. Huh? Okay, so let's put it this way. So if the Lakers had hired someone else and they used the F word at a press conference, would you be all bent out of shape?
Probably not. No.
Okay.
So you just, I'm not even bent out of shape with this. I just. Right.
Now, why don't you like Redick?
He's arrogant. He's smug. He talks down to people.
Okay.
He thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
You're the guy who loves Aaron Rodgers, right?
I do love Aaron Rodgers. Yeah.
Just want to make
sure. See, I don't think Rodgers, it's funny how we could read that differently. I don't think Rodgers is arrogant or smug the way JJ Redick is.
No, because I think JJ Redick is sort of unapologetic about being arrogant and smug, whereas Rodgers wants people to think he's not, but he is. Mm. But
I don't see it that way. You're a Redick fan?
Yeah, I like JJ.
Interesting. Yeah. You think he's going to be a good head coach, or just that separate?
I think that anyone who says either way doesn't, who knows? How could anyone possibly know if he's going to, I mean, I think he's a basketball savant, but does that mean you're a good head coach? No.
Yeah.
It's a lot more than knowing X's and O's. You got to manage the locker room. You got to manage the media. You got to deal with load management. You got to deal with the refs. So I don't know how anyone can make any judgment. I mean, I understand in this world, you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to be like, I think he's going to be the worst, the best. You have to throw the take. I don't see how you can make any judgment. The guy's never coached. I will say this. I don't think, because he's never been a head coach in the NBA, that that's going to mean he's terrible.
Right. I think there were a billion better hires that they could have made. Is he still going to, and by the way, I couldn't give a crap less about the Lakers. Is he still going to do the podcast with LeBron?
He's not doing any podcast. He's not doing his or the one with LeBron.
Wow. All right. That's a good step in the right direction.
I just think that whether he's a good coach, put that aside, he's got LeBron and Anthony Davis. If they can add a couple of players, I mean, he should, win 50 games without even blinking an eye. And then we see what happens in the postseason. I don't think, unless they totally flop, I don't know how you make any judgments until the postseason.
Yeah, I'm fascinated.
But I mean, Anthony Davis gets hurt every single day. So then what is J.J. Redick supposed to do?
Right.
I have to make a confession that I'm not proud of.
What?
I got to say, as someone who has been annoyed by the Taylor Swift thing interrupting my football, the video of Travis on stage with her, how could you watch that and not be like, look at these crazy kids. Go enjoy your life. Go be happy.
What do they do? I heard about, was it in England or something?
Yeah. He went on stage and did a little 1-minute thing with her as some character.
Man, who gives a shit?
Well, that was my take all along, but now they've won me over.
Well, you're not a Taylor Swift fan.
No.
I'm not talking about her personal. I'm talking about, like, you're not a fan of her music.
No.
So what enjoyment did you get? I did not see this clip.
It just, they look like two happy kids out there enjoying their lives. Go ahead and be happy.
Okay, great. Good for them. But we don't have to care about it.
Well, it was every single tweet, Instagram, and TikTok was that video.
Yeah.
So you don't really scroll through Instagram and TikTok. So that's where you're out of the loop on all these things.
Right. I mean, I know enough about what's been going on these sites, but I do not. I don't have TikTok. I don't really scroll through Instagram. And I've even cut back on Twitter, but I still know enough to know the top stories.
I've cut back on Twitter. I've heard that line from Sal for about 10 years straight.
The difference is this time I've actually done it. On well, I don't even read mentions anymore on that aspect of like, I'm not in it. I'll read it before the show, whatever, try to get, you know, keep up with what's going on throughout the course of the day, but very minimal compared to what it used to be.
All right. I think that's true, because I haven't gotten those angry texts from you about like, this certain person said this and look what this, yeah. All right. Let's read our June reviews for this podcast.
Okay.
There's been a lot of things coming in to the Apple. Not as many as I would like. Keep sending in the reviews. Keep sending in the reviews. But let's read these June Apple reviews. See what we got here. We'll respond to the people. All right, here we go. Sammy Sosa, 12335. Really love the show. 5 stars. Beautiful start. I love listening to the show, and Jimmy does a great job. Hearing Sal's ticket story got me thinking. Can't Sal get credentialed as a member of the media and go to sporting events for free? I also understand that maybe he wants to go as a fan and be able to cheer and behave differently than if he were there as quote-unquote media. Thanks for the show.
You want me to answer that one?
Yes.
Because there is an actual answer. You are correct that for most events that take place in New York, certainly, I can get a credential. However, because of an issue with an Audacy, which is the company I work for, an Audacy employee and the owner of Madison Square Garden, WFAN, and I believe all of Audacy, has been banned from getting credentials at Madison Square Garden.
Way to throw Maggie Gray right under the bus.
I didn't say you went there. I mean, that's,
it's a famous story. Everyone knows the story. Well, but so for people around the country who don't know, Maggie went on WFAN, said some negative things about James Dolan, and now James Dolan has banned everyone from Odyssey from getting credentialed. Unbelievable. I mean, that is, can you imagine an owner doing that? That is unbelievable.
So because of that, I cannot get a credential to Knicks or Rangers games, but also to further your point, even though it would be much cheaper and still get me in the building. And in that particular case for game 7 going by myself, I would have just gotten a credential. But yeah, it's not the same as going to the game and being
as
a fan.
So, right. All right. Moving on. I hate country music. 5 stars. Listen every week on Android. How to figure out how to rate on iPad. Love the interview with Barkley. You must listen every week. Love your Sal segment. Keep up the great interviews. Thank you. All right. This is XYNXZ1. Love the show and the Jimmy Trina tude. My favorite is Sal and Jimmy. Sal searching for a home was elite entertainment. Keep up the great work. You know how many people have told me they missed the Sal house hunting stories? It's crazy.
I appreciate that, but God, do I not miss that search. That was painful.
People miss it. All right. We'll have to find a new thing for Sal. All right. Marshfield, Wisconsin. Enjoy the Andrew Marchand discussion, especially about the WNBA storyline. Sal was outstanding as usual. That was an episode we had in early June with Andrew Marchand of The Athletic. And then we got a review here. This guy has, his username is like 7Bs and then OI, so it's boy. I started listening because Trina has great guests and prepares well as an interviewer. At first, I didn't get the Trina Thought segment because I don't care about New York sports and New York happenings. But once Sal started talking about the house and Mother's Day saga, I was hooked. As long as it doesn't end their marriage, Sal's wife needs to come on so Jimmy can ask where the two Mother's Day cards rank in her all-time gift ranking. Thanks for all you do. Keep up the great work. I told you, people want to know about the house.
God. There's always drama now going on inside the house. There's just no drama searching for the house. That's a whole other story.
Anything you want to share?
I mean, nothing in particular on this day that I could think of, but it's just always something.
Okay. Sounds like there is something to share, but
we won't press it. Put it this way. Our daughter is starting school early next week, and we're trying to potty train as well. And when I say we're trying to potty train.
Your wife.
Right. My wife's trying to potty train, and I think there's a part of her that holds, I don't know about resentment, but she's a little bothered that she's in the war zone.
Well, why won't you help? Why can't you help?
I'm at work all day. So she feels
For those around the country who don't know, Sal's show on WFAN is over at 2 o'clock.
SNY.
SNY, it's right. Yeah. That's true. All right.
So I have a TV show later. Sometimes it's even late. Like last night, I didn't get home until 1 in the morning. But most days I'm home. Most days I leave at 8, home by 7:30. That's
you've never been more happy to have that SNY job at 6 o'clock at night.
But because she's there going through it, and I'm not good at providing
support,
empathy. Right. Yeah, she'll then try to make sure I get a taste of what she's going through. That's the issue right now.
Okay. I don't even want to. All right. Now, this, we have a review here from Doc Lou in Iowa. Now, if you remember when we did the May reviews, I had a review that said the people in the business say the worst part of the podcast is Train of Thoughts with Sal. Remember that?
I do remember that. And I told him to kiss my ass or something like that.
Doc Lou writes, I never said I did not like the Sal segment. I just became tired of the house drama. Love Sal and his Ajita. Like Charles Barkley interview. And I had the, to be honest with you, at over 5.5. I think he said it 4 times. He always prefaces what he says with that. All right. So we got a correction there.
And I will say, too, just to correct, I never told you, Doc, to kiss my ass. I told the people, I was telling you to tell the people who said that to kiss my ass. But either way, they don't have to. It's all good.
All right. This is a great review after Sal's potty training story. Here we go. This is from Win Renee. Love the pod. I'm not a New Yorker or a New York sports fan, but it's always interesting to hear what it's like to live there, especially the complaining, which I do love too. Keep up the great work. I always think you're going to run out of things to talk about, but you always have great guests and topics. Also, like Jimmy, I cringe at the future of sports watching moving to streaming. Cable is the only way to go. Like everyone else, love the segment with Sal. Word of advice to Sal. Just be ready and willing to sacrifice a little more of your time and energy as you get older. Little things like flowers or some other gesture on Mother's Day go a long way, even if you don't understand why it matters to your wife. So maybe with the potty training issue going on, a gift perhaps?
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. And I do appreciate that. By the way, you just made me think of it there because she was saying how the way that you, watch sports, the viewing in the future. Did I tell you that I now cut the cord for the first time?
Really?
Yep, I took the leap, and I'm loving every minute of it. I can't believe it. I told you, the company that I had, it wasn't the hardwired boxes anymore. So I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, I might as well just get the better internet in Verizon, have that throughout the house, and just go streaming. So I am. I'm right now.
But what do you have, YouTube TV?
Yes.
YouTube TV.
Sunday tickets already been purchased, my friend.
Right, because you get a big discount if you have YouTube TV.
EOL was like $100 off, but we're set to go. And because I'm YouTube TV, I get the locals on for the game mix as well.
So YouTube TV has SNY?
It does not.
Well, how are you watching the Mets?
The MLB Network app.
See? Bullshit, right? All right, does YouTube TV have the Yes Network?
No. Also,
right. I don't want to hear it. We're going to the next review. So I can't deal with
considering,
this.
Oh, well, I could talk to you about this off the air, but are you considering cord cutting? But you're just afraid of those channels?
Okay. No.
I didn't want to do it. I had my hand forced. I couldn't really. The bill was ridiculous. The internet service wasn't great. It was streaming anyway. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to pay this much I might as well try it the other way. And right now I could not be happier.
So let me ask you this. You watch the Mets on your MLB app?
Yeah. Now, remember, too, I'm watching a lot of stuff while I'm at work certain times.
You're home on a Sunday and the Mets are on SNY. On your app, is it on your TV? Or are you watching on your phone or iPad?
No, either way, I can watch it on the TV.
Oh, God. All right. Sox Nation 71. Jimmy, love the podcast. I found it summer of 2022 and have been a loyal listener since. It has always been good and love. I usually ask the questions I would want to ask. Your guest list is A+, especially in the last 8 to 10 months with Barkley, twice, Scott Hanson, Bill Simmons, Kevin Ababili, and Ian Eagle has the best stories. I look forward each Thursday morning to see who's on deck for that day also. Also, I've been a fan of Sal's for a while, back to WFAN overnights. I miss Sal's house stories and the drama of the search, and glad he's settled in. He knows you don't miss the drama of the search, and he's glad you settled in. Can't wait to see who you'll get for next football season. I know everyone is wondering if Brady is the white whale now as far as guests on the pod besides The Rock. Heck, Olsen did the pod a few times. Brady needs to step up. Love the pod, Jimmy and Sal. Keep him coming. So there you go. Nice review.
Obviously, before the Brady interview.
Yeah.
Who's left for you? Do you have a dream interview yet? Did you have The Rock?
No, Cena? I've given up on The Rock because I've had a couple of times. If The Rock didn't do it during the WrestleMania season when he came back, he's never going to do it. So forget The Rock. And Larry's done with Curb, so Larry's never going to come on. So there really is no dream guest right now.
Those are the two. And I know you were close with Larry, right?
No. Oh, yeah. Close in getting close him on. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say the number one guest on my list right now is Brady, because I don't consider what we did a real interview. So Brady is my number one guest.
Well, I mean, is that realistic?
I'm guessing after, but I don't know. I don't know. We'll see maybe when he gets started with Fox what happens.
Right. That's true. Down the road.
But I have a feeling he's, I don't know. I have to see how his relationship with Fox plays out. I don't know if they're going to have the access to him they want. I don't know if he's going to be helpful to them in terms of doing interviews. I know he's going to end up on doing the podcast circuit, and he'll be on all the big ones, and we'll see what happens. All right. C. Shark says, I enjoy listening about the behind-the-scenes aspects of sports media and the stories behind the broadcasters, which have marriages to so many sports moments in my life. I really enjoy the segment, Sal, as it transports me from my car in Las Vegas to a friendly sports banner at a diner in New York City. I'm also a fellow Billy Joel fan and appreciate the recommendations on great places to eat outside of Manhattan. I hope to visit them on my next trip. Very nice. All right, here we go. These are from last week. Ken Jaws, what happened with Brady? Wouldn't he do 15 minutes if you shilled for TB12 too? Don't sell out. Worst interview since RG3, which was Mount Rushmore. Still give 5 stars since everyone screws up now and then. If that is what he brings to the booth, wow. I thought Brady was great, and I think he's going to be great. There's one issue with the Brady podcast. I want to be clear. The only issue with the Brady podcast is that it was only 10 minutes, and you can't do good interviews in 10 minutes. Tom was great. I had no issues with Tom. I thought everything he said was good. I just can't do a good interview in 10 minutes. So there's no reason to say anything negative about Brady. He was fine. He wasn't the issue. All right. This is really long. All right. Let's see. Tried Saw. Jimmy, give your audience some credit. We aren't idiots. We know 10 minutes with Tom Brady presented by a company who used to employ OJ is not your standard interview. For the same reason you were willing to compromise and do it, we are happy to not compare the result to the longer conversations you usually have. That interview was as good as it could possibly have been under extremely limiting circumstances. It was an enjoyable listen, and if that one ups the odds, we get to hear a longer one in the future, even better. 90% of your audience will be competent enough to see the difference there and skip ahead to Sal when the guest is a wrestler. Thanks, keep up the great work, and have Andrew Catalan on so the two of you can exchange Seinfeld references for now. I got to get Catalan on during the football season. He's never been on. I got to get him on because I love listening to him on Sundays.
I used to work with him in SNY. By the way, that is a great review. That's well said about the Brady interview. I love what he said right there because you have to understand what it is. You can't turn down Tom Brady. I don't care if it's right. 5 minutes, you take him. So you're right. You can't do it the way you want to, but you still have to do it.
What did Catalan do at SNY?
He was working on, there was a show called The Wheelhouse. He actually might have anchored some sports night shows as well, but he did a couple of shows. He worked on The Wheelhouse. This was back where it was near SI back in the day, in Midtown.
Right.
Years ago. Probably 2011-ish, 12 maybe.
We're big Andrew Catalan fans here. Love him on NFL Sundays. All right. This guy, JE1S, so Jets here. And pay attention, Sal. You want to hear this one. I love the pod, and I've been trying to pick a favorite moment to include in my review. Jimmy and Sal talking about Grimace just moves to the top. So is Grimace from Sesame Street to Fun Isn't Our Bag is a perfect snapshot of what makes this pod great. Keep the wrestling and the sports. Wish I could give it 10 stars. Jimmy, please book Grimace. It's the only way to top Jeter and Brady. How are we doing with Grimace now these days? The Mets are still on fire. Everyone's crediting Grimace. Sal wanted basically to kill Grimace. Where do we stand with Grimace?
Well, I think when we taped this last week, it still did not blow up. I'm pretty sure after
it was starting to. It was starting to.
Right. But after we taped the podcast, it was like in the post and awful announcing or something. I was like, holy shit. Like, what are we doing here? But I did end up apologizing to Grimace, and we have now made amends and all is well in the land of Grimace.
What a suck up. Who told you to do that?
I couldn't resist the purple force any longer.
But did someone tell you to do that, or did you just, you couldn't take the hate anymore?
No, truthfully, I'll tell you a behind the scenes story. So we taped last Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
I ripped Grimace on actually Sunday night and then again on Monday.
What a goddamn sentence.
I ripped him on I ripped him on, and this is unbelievable. I ripped him on Monday in a throwaway 5-minute segment, like, enough with this Grimace nonsense. It's ridiculous, whatever. Enough of his fat purple ass. It starts to go nuts Monday. I'm getting texts from Steve Gelbs, who covers the Mets. Hold, you can't resist the force, Grimace. Wait till they win tonight. Mets are winning like 7-0 in the first inning against the Rangers. At that moment, I knew I could not resist it. I went and purchased the costume on Amazon and had it delivered, and then knew that I'd eventually have to pay it off. And then it was my idea to apologize to Grimace this week after the Mets, you know, won 4 of 6 on the road trip.
Should have kept the feud going. That's the bit you're supposed to do in this day and age. All right, last review, and this guy's name is just a bunch of letters. So I'm not going to say them. Hits just the right mix of sports, media, and personality. A must-listen each midweek. The Sal bit is unbelievable. Great content each week. Grimace hating? That's a high water mark for this middle-aged crisis individual. What a review. That's my favorite review.
Grimace. I just don't understand it. I just don't understand. How is that even a story, Grimace?
Like I said last week, as that astute reviewer pointed out, fun is not our bag.
But that's inaccurate. In many ways, it is very accurate. In many, many ways, right. I will admit that is very accurate. But in this particular case, I don't, like, you think Grimace is fun? You know what I'm saying? Like, is that what we're talking about? That, if that's your idea of fun, then you're right. I'm sorry, that doesn't get me going. Grimace, hanging out with Grimace.
Maybe you can have Grimace come over and help potty train your daughter.
Yeah, well, now I'm thinking of different things. Of different things they could do with that costume and, you know, make it so work.
The feud's back on.
No, I had to bury the hatchet until the Mets start going in the tank again. Mets have been playing well. I had to bury the hatchet with Grimace.
Oh my God. I love it. All right. Well, those are the reviews for June. Fill up Apple with more reviews so we can read them in July. And we will see you next week. Thanks, Sal.
All right. See you later.
All right. My many thanks to Pablo Torre. My thanks to Sal Licata. My thanks to you for listening. Shelby Royston for producing, as always. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. If you missed any recent episodes, last week was episode 500 of SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Derek Jeter from Fox, Richard Deitch from The Athletic were my guests. 2 weeks ago, Tom Brady joined me for an interview. Also, Jim Miller with a lot of news on ESPN and some contract stuff. Stephen A. Smith, UFC, so check that out. Andrew Martian was on the podcast recently, as well as Charles Barkley. So if you missed any of those episodes, go into the archives, give them a listen, subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Rate and review on Apple. We'll read the July reviews in a few weeks. All right. That wraps it up. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.